All right, we'll get started on our week 11. We'll be looking at chapters 21 and 22 tonight. And this is, we have finished the first 20 chapters. And so this is where it starts to get kind of funky. We start jumping all around in time. So you can, I'll point out as we jump around chronologically, and we're going to be doing that three times tonight in two chapters. So I will point those out in the slides and let you know exactly where we are chronologically in the book of Jeremiah when, as we go through the study. All of chapter 21 occurs at about the same time. So again, I will point that out to you. And I stole this slide. This is a slide that we used previously that had this chart on it. So I wanted to bring that back up to you again and show you where we are now in chapter 21. So we had been for the last 20 chapters dealing with Josiah as the king. And so get that up there. You can see Josiah was the good king. And so God promised Josiah that during his reign, the Babylonians would not completely destroy Judah, take over Jerusalem, and do all the horrible things that the Lord had told them that was coming because of their sin, because of the sin that had happened during the reigns of Manasseh and Amon, his son. These chapters 21 and 22 will be dealing with Jehoiakim and Zedekiah and Conaniah, all of those kings that followed Josiah who were evil kings. They were not good, and they did not follow in Josiah's example. They did not follow in David's example. So we'll look at the chronology. I'm going to bring back up this chart of chronology again. I've outlined where we're going to be in chapter 21. You can see it here. This is, if you look at the top of the chart, we were dealing with chapters 1 through 20 at the top, and they were years 626 through 608. So chapters 1 and 2 through 6 were in the year 626. Chapters 7 through 10 were years 626 through 621. Chapter 11, the first 8 verses was also in 621. And then chapters 11 through 20 were the years 620 through 608. And it didn't seem like such a large span of time, but it really was. We covered close to 18 years in those first 20 chapters during the reign of Josiah. Now we're going to start in chapter 21. And if you look on the chart I've given you on your screen there, that occurs in the year 588. So we are again jumping 20 years into the future in this one chapter and dealing with the reign of Zedekiah. And Zedekiah was going to be one of the last kings that was allowed to reign in Judah before the Babylonians completely wiped them out. So, getting into chapter 21, the first question I asked was, what was Zedekiah's hope when he inquired of the Lord?
That Babylon would withdraw.
Correct, right. So he was looking to see that the Lord would cause Nebuchadnezzar to withdraw from warring against Judah out of kindness and wonder, knowing that the Lord is kind and wonderful, but he himself, being a king who was evil and not willing to follow God in the ways that he should have, inquired of the Lord this question. And I don't think he's going to like the answer. How did the Lord answer his question?
Lord said, I'm going to be the one that's going to fight against you myself.
Yeah. He says, I will make your weapons of war fail, and the Babylonians will take your city. And he said, in anger and wrath, the Lord will war against Judah. He will war against Judah with pestilence, and with that he will kill the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Then those who survive pestilence, sword, and famine will become slaves to the Babylonians. So what ways did the Lord set before them?
Life and death.
You got it. The way of life and the way of death. And the Lord told them exactly how they would live and exactly how they would die. He gets into great detail about that, especially when Jerusalem is sieged against. And when the Babylonian army is fully engaged against the city, he tells them there's one way to live and there's another way to die. And we'll get into that in just a minute. So when these things happen, who is the one who will live?
Those who give themselves over to the Chaldeans.
Exactly. Those who come out of the walled city of Jerusalem and surrender to the Chaldeans, to the Babylonians, those are the ones who will live. Those who stay in the city and think that the Lord's going to save them, who think that the Lord cannot be beaten, that the Judah and the city of Jerusalem will stand forever, those are the ones who are going to die. The Lord is bringing his full wrath and anger against them with pestilence, with famine, and with the sword. And they will die in that city. So, according to what would they be punished?
The results of their deeds.
You got it. Yep. According to the results of their deeds. And the Lord is against them all. He says, wherever they live and whoever they are, he gives some examples of those people who live in the valley, those people who live in the mountains, those who live in the desert. He doesn't really care who they are. He's fully engaged against them. He fully expects that Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. The temple will be crushed and destroyed, not a stone left on another. And all of the spoils of the temple will be taken away. There will be nothing of value left in the temple. It will be completely annihilated. And all of the furnishings, all of the serving pieces, all of the treasury will be gone. The Babylonians will take it all.
Ted?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, may I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the culmination or the beginning of the end for Judah as a nation, but this was prophesied by Isaiah 100 years prior to that to Hezekiah. When Hezekiah received some visitors from the Babylonians, he showed all of his treasures to the Babylonian emissaries, and they went back, and Isaiah went to him and said, well, hey, what did you show him? He said, I showed him everything. I didn't hold anything back. And Isaiah, the day is coming when they're going to come back and they're going to take it all.
Yep, absolutely. And that's exactly what happened or will happen here in the time of Jeremiah. Jeremiah will live to see that happen. He will live through it. So they are, these last few kings in these last 20 years of the reign of the Judean dynasty, the Davidian dynasty, they are about to be wiped out. And like I said, we've jumped ahead in time, in chronology, about just about 20 years to see Zedekiah, one of the last kings, asking the Lord, well, you know, are you going to be kind and generous to us, or are you going to let something else happen to us? And fully knowing, or at least should have known what the answer would be, that because of their evil, because of what the Lord had already told Jeremiah, it doesn't matter who stands between the Israelites and God, whether it be Moses or Samuel, he will not change his heart or his mind to completely annihilate the country because of the sin of Manasseh and Ammon, because of what they allowed to happen to their children and worshiping idols and sacrificing to those idols. They are to be annihilated forever, except for the remnant, which God has made account for. So again, that finishes off chapter 21. And so now we take another step in chronology. And again, I'll pull the chart up. And so now as we enter chapter 22, we have two different time periods in chapter 22. So we're going to step backwards. We're going to step backwards about 19 years to right after Josiah died and Jehoiakim takes over. So we kind of like had a future flash forward in chapter 21, and we see the end of the kingdom coming. It's at hand. It is within just a few months when Zedekiah makes that plea. And actually, that's in the year 588. And so it's about 18 months before the kingdom falls. So like I said, it's just a few months before Judah is dead and gone. Now we're going to, again, step back in time. And chapter 22, verses 1 through 19 are taking place in the year 608, which was right at the end of Josiah's reign and the beginning of Jehoiakim's reign. That is Josiah's son. And so Josiah is dead, and Jehoahaz, the first son, is exiled. And so he was a king for just a very short time, maybe just a couple of months. And Jehoiakim takes over. And so these next 19 verses we're dealing with in chapter 22 are during the reign of Jehoiakim. So upon what condition would kings again sit on the throne of David?
He was to act with justice and righteousness.
Exactly. If justice and righteousness, protection of those who are robbed, protection of strangers and orphans and widows, and no innocent blood is shed, then kings will again sit on the throne of David. But what would befall Judah if they continued in their sinful ways?
His house is desolate?
Correct. Right. So the house of David will become a desolation. So by whom did the Lord swear that the king's house would become a desolation?
By myself, declares the Lord.
By himself, because by none could he swear any higher. He is the Lord God, the creator of all that is, and he cannot swear by anything higher than himself. So that's who he did swear by. He swore by himself that the kingdom of David, the house of David, would become a desolation if they continued in their sinful ways. And that's not to say that if they had a complete change of heart, if they changed everything, that they wouldn't still go into captivity, because they would. They're still going to go. The Lord has already told Jeremiah that there's no one that is going to change his wrath, his anger towards them because of Manasseh and Ammon. And so the captivity would still occur. However, the kingship of David had a possibility of continuing if certain criteria were met. So what would the nations say of Jerusalem?
Why has the Lord done this to this great city?
Exactly. As they passed by, and it's in chapter 22 and verse 8, as they pass by the city, they will say to one another, why has the Lord done thus to this great city? And remember, Jerusalem had been a walled, fortified city for many, many, many years before Israel took the promised land. And it was not an easy city to take by them even. So that city had been fortified and protected for centuries. And now we see that Babylon is coming. And if everything goes as Jeremiah has prophesied, the city will be in ruin. It will no longer be a walled city. It will no longer be protected. It will be completely open and available to everyone. And that's what we have here is a word picture of foreigners walking through the land that is now desolate and seeing this walled city, this immaculate Jerusalem that was fortified and protected. And they look at it in ruin and say, what has the Lord done to this city and why did he do it? What would the answer to this question be?
They committed idolatry.
Right.
Abandoned God.
And they broke their covenant with the Lord. Now, this isn't the first time they've broken this covenant. They've broken the covenant many times. Many times across hundreds of years, they had violated the covenant with their Lord. And he had forgiven them time and time again. This time, he would not forgive them. This calamity that would come on Jerusalem and Judah had been predicted for over 100 years because of what had happened. What Ron had talked about with Hezekiah was also a good king, but he made mistakes. And then following Hezekiah, we had the worst king of the worst kings of Judah, Manasseh. And he committed atrocities that were absolutely indefensible to the Lord and that would lead to their ruin. But it was because they broke their covenant and bowed down to other gods, violated one of the Ten Commandments, you shall have no other gods before me, is why this city was laid waste in Jeremiah's time. So why were they to weep for those who go away?
He'll never return and never see his native land again.
Exactly right. He will never return to see his native land again. Now we know that captivity happened in waves. It happened in three specific time periods that were just about, as I recall, 14 or 16 years apart. I can't remember exactly what it was. But we had a first wave, a second wave, and then a final wave. And we do know that there were some who came back to Israel from captivity, who could remember what the temple was like, who could remember what the walls of Jerusalem were like. But they were not old men when they left. They were the youngest that went into captivity, that survived captivity, that then made the choice to return, that saw this happen. Almost everybody who was over a certain age died in captivity. because the captivity was 70 years. That's pretty much a guarantee that no one who lived in the previous kingship was going to live long enough to return. And so they were to weep for those who go away, those who did what the Lord said. If you want to live, surrender to the Chaldeans. And as the people in Jerusalem who chose not to do that, watched those people go into captivity, they wept because they knew that they would never return again, that they were going into captivity to spend the rest of their lives in a foreign country under the thumb of a foreign king. So which of Josiah's sons who became king after him would be led into captivity and never see Judah again?
Coniah?
It's Shalom. It was in the New American Standard. It's also translated Jeconiah or Coniah. Yeah, and he's led away to never see Judah again. So what three sins were the builders guilty of?
They built without righteousness, without justice, and they didn't pay their fellow countrymen.
Correct. So they built their house without righteousness and their upper room without justice. They were using their neighbor's services without pay or paying wages. And then they were building a spacious, roomy house with windows and paneling it with cedar and red paint. All of these things were sins. They were accumulating to themselves more than they needed. And they were doing it unjustly and unrighteously. And they were cheating their fellow man. So in times past, who was it well with?
Josiah.
Right, those who did righteousness, like Josiah. Those who followed God's word and obeyed his commandments. Those who bowed their knee to the Lord and not to other gods. It was well with them. God took care of them. Just as God had taken care of Josiah. Because he bowed his knee and humbled himself to God, he was given the kingship and allowed to reign for 31 years without worry of the invasion, the calamity that had been foretold by Jeremiah. So what would be the final end of Jehoiakim?
He was going to die and be buried the burial of a donkey.
Yeah. Yep. So he's going to have a donkey's burial dragged off and thrown out beyond the gates of Jerusalem. How's that for a king? How's that for an end to a kingship? A donkey's burial. He'll be treated like an animal and just thrown outside the gates and left to die, or left to be scavenged by the birds and the beasts, as God had predicted. Many of those who died in Jerusalem wouldn't be buried because there wouldn't be enough people to bury all the dead, to bury all those who would die of the famines and the pestilence and by the sword. So many of those who fell would be just become food for the animals. And those who didn't die that way, we have examples shown and foretold of many of the children of Judah becoming cannibals, eating their own children, eating each other, because there was no other food. They were starving in Jerusalem because that siege lasted for 3 years where they had nothing coming in. They could not grow their own food inside the city walls because they were under siege all the time. Of course, they had animals within the walls, but those didn't last very long. They had died of famine and pestilence. And once the animals were gone and all of the food that they had saved was gone, then there was nothing left. So those people turned on each other. So that ends that chronological time period for chapter 22. And now, again, we jump to another time period. So we're jumping backwards a little further, or forwards again, sorry. We're jumping up to the reign of Jehoiachin. So we were just in the year 608. Now we're jumping ahead to the years 598 and 597 into the reign of Jehoiachin. As you can see from the chart, Jehoiachin reigned from December of 598 to March of 597. A whole 4 months. Not a really long reign at all. So how long had they refused to listen to the Lord?
From their youth?
Absolutely. Since the time of their youth, they had refused to listen to the Lord. What does that say about these people? About their parents? About how they were being raised?
They weren't obeying the Lord, so.
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely amazing that Josiah came from Ammon, that his grandfather was Manasseh, and that he lived through 6 years of Manasseh's reign. But yet he was one of the most righteous kings in Judah. That says a lot about whoever was raising Josiah, because I certainly don't think it could be Ammon or Manasseh. So there was somebody else who was raising him, teaching him about the Lord and about what it means to be in a covenant relationship with the Lord. But Josiah is now dead. We have moved on to the reign of his sons and grandsons. And Jehoiachin is now the ruler that we're looking at.
Ed?
Yeah.
It also really empowers us to understand how much the word of the Lord, when it's applied to us, can affect our lives, even with everything else that's all around.
Yep, absolutely. It's very eye-opening to me to see people make the choice to come to the Lord, even when they haven't grown up in a family that believes that. And to study it out, they may have been raised in another church or in another denomination, or agnostic parents who don't believe in religion at all. And they make the choice. They make the choice to come to the Lord, to search for him, to find him, to study, to learn about him. And again, Josiah was one of those rare pieces of history that show us that that can happen, that individuals can make a choice. They can be raised by somebody who can teach them what it means to search, what it means to learn about the truth. So into whose hands would Coniah be given?
Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon.
Yep. So in chapter 22, I think we're in verse 25. It says, and I will give you over into the hand of those who are seeking your life. Yes, into the hand of those whom you dread, even the hand of Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, and into the hand of the Chaldeans, I will hurl you and your mother who bore you into another country where you were not born, and there you will die. So what would not happen to the descendants of Kenaniah?
They would not have any children, and they would not prosper, and they would not sit on the throne.
That's what I was looking for. Exactly, hit that nail on the head. They would never sit on the throne of David or rule in Judah again. So what does that tell us about the line of David? About the dynasty of David as a dynasty of kings?
It's done as far as here on this earth.
That Coniah was the end of it. And the Lord told him, you and yours will never sit on a throne of David ever again. So that ends those two short chapters. And as you can see, it becomes a little more difficult in Jeremiah to keep your place where actually you are in time. And so as the lessons go, I will do my very best to point out when we're jumping from time period to time period, because we're going to be doing a lot of that in the upcoming studies, because chronologically, Jeremiah jumps all over the place after the first 20 chapters. We get a pretty chronological point of view for those first 20 chapters while we're dealing with Josiah's reign. But after that, we're going to be doing a lot of this back and forth in time periods jumping. So I will try and point out whenever that happens. So let's look at some lessons and applications we can get from the study of these two chapters. So we started with Zedekiah consulting with God. And I think what we can learn from this is that although it is wise to consult with God, it doesn't always mean that you're going to get your way. You can ask God for just about anything you want, but there's always going to be two answers to that question, either yes or no. And we may not understand why God says either. Why, when we think it should be yes, God says no. Or when we think it should be no, God says yes. I think of praying to God that a disease won't happen to you, or that there won't be a negative outcome to something that happened to you. But God says, yes, there's going to be that negative outcome. And there's a reason for that. And so God gives us what's best in the end, but we know for sure that God will not reward ungodly behavior. And so when you're living a life outside of God, you can pray to God all you want, but that doesn't mean that God is going to give you what you think you should have.
Ted?
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
The Galatian letter 5 verses 21 and 22 there, where he tells us all the different things that we should not be doing, and all those who participate and basically do that will not enter the kingdom. And then they give the things that we should be doing. Well, I was just rode up to in Washington with a guy. We rode about 4+ hours and he just goes to the Christian church. He's an elder there. And he was telling me that once saved, always saved. And so I had to listen to him explain his side of it on the way up and me on the way down. But that reminds me here of, you know, we're not always going to get our way, but it's sometimes hard to tell people like that who believe in the once saved, always saved, that they just think that no matter what they do, it's okay.
And on that point, it's always amazing to me that people believe that, when you can look at so many examples in the New Testament of, especially the Apostle Paul, who completely understood that there was no guarantee of his salvation, because there was always the possibility that he could step outside those bounds. And he prayed continuously for that salvation, for the reward that God had promised if you were righteous. And we see Paul as an example to us, because we know that Paul was a Pharisee of Pharisees. He was hardcore against Christians until he learned that he shouldn't be. And then he was hardcore against the Pharisees once he learned the truth. So, but Paul remembered his life before he became a Christian, before he became a chosen apostle of Christ. And he remembered all the sins he had committed, all of the people he had hauled away and that were probably killed because he was doing what he thought was right, but was wrong, and wrong, terribly wrong. And so he would remember those things in his past and how that led people to their end because of him.
Yeah.
So let's note the arrogance of Judah in thinking that none would enter their dwelling. If you look at chapter 21 and verse 13, the Lord says, "Behold, I am against you, O valley dweller, O rocky plain, declares the Lord. You men who say, who will come against us, or who will enter into our habitations?" Again, this is in Jeremiah chapter 21, about 18 months before Judah was done, within the reign of Zedekiah. And so just 18 months before Babylon wiped out Judah and Jerusalem. In the year 588, we have people saying, you know, the Lord's with us. Who's going to be able to come into our land? Who's going to be able to come into our cities? Because the Lord is with us. When Jeremiah has been prophesying to them about the coming calamity and telling them that their attitude towards God was unacceptable to God. But they were still believing that they were the chosen of God and that nothing could happen to them. How did they know the Lord, and how do we know the Lord? And to put that in context, let's look at chapter 22 and verse 16, where it says, "He pled the cause of the afflicted and needy, and then it was well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord?" So the question phrased in that context would be, how did those Judeans show that they knew the Lord? And then to bring it to us, how do we show that we know the Lord?
How we look at our fellow man, and how we, it says judge them, but how we also treat our fellow man also.
Absolutely. This brings us to the book of James, where we learn that faith without works is dead. We can't show our faith in God by saying that we are faithful and that we believe in God. We've got to be able to show our faith with our works, as James explains to us. Those works are spelled out for us in numerous places throughout the Bible. But we see spelled out in Jeremiah chapter 22 and verse 16, taking care of the afflicted, taking care of the needy. Jesus said those who fed those who were hungry, who clothed those who were naked, who gave drink to those who thirst. Those are the sheep. And those were the ones who were going to earn righteousness through the grace of the Lord. Not that you could earn, or not earn righteousness, but earn the grace of the Lord through showing their faith and showing those around them who the Lord is by how you treat your fellow man, by how you do put your fellow man in front of yourself, selflessness, is compared to selfishness. So how easy is it to forget God when all is well, but that is the best time to turn to him? And I think we've talked about this in lessons previous. It is so easy for us to forget about God when life is great, when things are going well, when our plans for life are working exactly how we have them planned. And you know the saying that life is what happens while you're planning it. Well, it's easy for us to forget God when our lives are in harmony and going well. And we praise God when our lives are going well, but it's easy to forget God when our lives are going well. It's easy to forget that he's there and that he is the one who is making sure these things happen to us and for us. But that's the best time to turn to God, is when we are more than capable of doing so, because life has allowed us to be that way. Because we are in a position where we can do that. It's so unfortunate that so many people turn to God when their lives are a shambles. And that's the time when they have the least capability to turn to God, because it's really difficult to do so. But then people will make time to do it. People will make time to find God in their lives when life is painful, when life hurts, when things are not going well. And as we see in our examples of the Judeans and those in Jerusalem, life was going well for them. They hadn't had the famine. They hadn't had the pestilence. They hadn't had all this calamity upon them. And so they had forgotten God. They had had years and years and years of good times. And they were bowing down to other gods, sacrificing to other gods. They were breaking their covenant with the Lord. And they were about to learn what it's like to not have God in your life. Because that's what the Lord had told them was going to happen, is that he was going to be against them, not for them. And they were going to encounter the wrath and anger of the Lord for the multitude of sins that they had committed against him and against their fellow man. So chapter 22 and verse 30 is a very important verse that explains why Christ cannot reign upon this earth again. That premillennialistic idea that the throne of David will continue and that Christ will come back to reign on that throne of David. Kaniah or Jeconiah brought to an end the earthly dynasty of King David, and we just read about that in chapter 22. Neither Kaniah nor any of his descendants would ever sit on the throne of David ever again. This idea that Christ will return and take an earthly seat on the throne of David in the promised land is laid to rest many, 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 many years before the New Testament. In the year 588, as I remember, when this occurred. And so this this helps us focus on the idea that many of the things that are happening in our time, that people are willing to bend over backwards in order to make sure that Christ can return to Israel and to Jerusalem. That's just a waste of time. That's an absolute horrible focus to have, because God will take care of his own when he's ready. And when it is his time, he will make it known. You won't have any doubts about it. We don't need to try and fulfill God's plan, because God will take care of his own plan. God will make sure that his plan is fulfilled, regardless of whether or not we are willing to help. He did the same thing with Christ. His plan was in place for Christ from the foundations of the earth. We see that explained in the when the first sin was committed in the Garden of Eden. And we knew that from that time, that the plan of Christ, God's plan for Christ was in motion. And even if it didn't happen when we thought it should happen, or as fast as we thought it should happen, it was in motion and it was fulfilled. Even though it looked like Satan had won the battle against Christ by putting him on the cross, we know that that was God's plan all along. And the only reason we have salvation is because Christ went to the cross. So this idea that Christ needs to return to rule on an earthly kingdom is silly and completely unfounded, because we're told in Jeremiah that the line of the king of David, his dynasty, ended with Coniah. That's all I have for tonight. Any comments or questions?
Thanks, Ted. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Yes, Ted, thanks very much again.
Absolutely. And like I said, I'll do my best to point out when we see things, when we're jumping around in time periods, because I looked at a chronological study of Jeremiah, and let me tell you what, it just tears the book apart in order for you to put it in chronological order. And there's even places where you take one verse out of a chapter because it's at a different time period. So I'll do my best to point that out as we go along and make sure that we know where we are when we're talking about these things. Because, you know, we jump from Josiah to Zedekiah to Jehoiakim to Coniah. Like I said, all in the matter of two chapters. So it can be confusing, but we'll stay on task and we'll get it accomplished.
Ted?
Yes, sir.
In Matthew chapter 1, verse 12, we find that Jeconiah, or Coniah, whichever you want to call him, is in the lineage of Christ. So that reinforces what you were saying. He can't possibly sit on the throne of David physically on the earth and reign with any success whatsoever.
Right. And there would be no reason for him to. Christ has no interest in reigning on a physical kingdom on this planet, on earth. That time is come and gone. Christ reigns next to his Father in heaven. And why he would give that up to come here is mind-boggling to me. But some people do believe that.